Tonight, the Kings facing a must-win situation. That is, they must win to keep their sixth or higher seeding dreams alive. They try to beat a Pelicans team that they haven't beaten all year. We have some numbers for you in just a moment that go a long ways towards explaining why the Kings haven't beaten the Pelicans yet. Before we get to that, on the chat here, I don't think you're going to care for this, Drapes. BW, he says, Masters has its own app, 24/7, the Masters app. Live coverage all day, was watching at 7 a.m., says, yes, in the class, the kids need to know history. So, did you know, I guess there's an app?
I got to get the app and stream it and cast it on the TV, because how I watch it, Whitey, I'm rarely just sitting down actually watching.
Uh-huh.
Things are usually on in the background for me. And so if I stream it on my phone or on my iPad, you're not seeing it because I'm moving around. I'm making the bacon and the eggs.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm doing things.
You still have your boxers on when you're making your bacon and eggs? Because you said you'd be in your boxers.
No, because you don't want it to grease us.
All right, good.
In certain parts. So, I threw some shorts on or something like
good,
that.
Good.
Not boxer shorts. But, No, and so I get it. The Masters app. All right, I guess I can do that. I got to cast it search for it on the TV, obviously, and go to the app on the TV. But what happened to the good old days of just turning on your TV and finding things?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shouldn't have to watch college basketball and True TV and all this and got to search. There's too many channels out there right now, man. Too many options. I need 3, 6, and 10. That's what it was in Philly when I was growing up. ABC, NBC, CBS. 3, 6,
what
and 10.
What was the public channel?
Channel 12, yeah. WHYY. Channel 12 back in the day. Like, it's just too many. It's too splintered now, if you will, sports.
Yeah. I remember when cable started and all of a sudden it was like you had like 5 channels.
Right.
Oh my God. This is the greatest thing ever.
And so, you know, I find myself not watching anything because there's too much. Things are just on in the background now.
Mm-hmm. All right. It is pretty cool the choices you have, but it is frustrating when you have a million channels and the one thing you want, where is it? I can't watch it.
Right. And the problem is the Masters is the only tournament like that, I think. You know, especially here on the West Coast. You got to think by like 8 o'clock, something got to be on, right?
Uh-huh.
Think about being on the East Coast and you got to wait till 3 o'clock to watch the Masters live on TV.
You know, it's funny, about 1990 or so, Springsteen did a song. I've never been a big Springsteen guy.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe. Are you RJ? No, okay.
Nah.
And he's great, but he had a song called 57 Channels and Nothing On, and it was about that.
Yeah.
But now, 57, that's nothing.
That's nothing. I mean, I don't even know how many channels. Hundreds?
There are hundreds. Definitely hundreds of channels.
And I could never find anything on.
Can the Kings find a path to victory tonight? Listen to this. I think we all pretty much agree that the Kings' best chance for a win tonight comes from De'Aaron Fox playing well.
Yes.
In the four games against the Pelicans so far this year, De'Aaron Fox, first game he was 5 for 18, 2 for 12 on threes. In the second game, he was, let's see here, 9 for 17,
mm-hmm.
2 for 7 threes. That was a good game he had. Then he was 10 for 25 in the third game. They played 1 for 7 on threes. And the last time they played here, he was 1 for 10, 1 for 4 on threes. So for the four games, De'Aaron Fox shooting 36% from the floor against the Pelicans, 20% from the three-point line. So they've done a great job of defending.
And if I'm correct, I got his splits here. The 18.3 points he averages, second fewest versus any team. And that's only the Houston in which he only played one game, and he averaged 18. He scored 18. And so the Pelicans do a tremendous job. And as you look deeper into the numbers, Whitey, let me get your opinion on this too. He's taken 70 total shots against this Pelicans team. 30 of them have been three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
And so almost half, you know, roughly 45% of his shots are coming from three against the Pelicans.
A lot of that's by design. That's what the Pelicans wanted to do.
You know, but and also I think, too, because when you can't get by guys, you settle a lot, too. And so look for De'Aaron. If I'm a coach, De'Aaron, give the ball up and then keep moving and then get it back on the move. And so I don't know what the answer is for De'Aaron Fox, you know, because if you're a great player, you got to step up. I don't care if they throw Kawhi Leonard at you. Like, you know, you got to find a way to get it done tonight if you're De'Aaron Fox. Maybe tonight, hopefully, is a high free throw kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Get to the line 8 to 10 times tonight for
De'Aaron
Fox.
That would be great. I don't know how likely that is given the way they're calling games this
right,
week in the
right.
NBA. But, yeah, that would – you got to figure, though, if they're calling it that way for the Kings and – you know, the Pelicans are going to be getting to the line as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what's interesting about De'Aaron Fox's numbers, we talk about the shooting, but he only averages 3.3 assists against the Pelicans also. And so they're taking away his passing as well. And I don't know, maybe guys aren't making shots or whatever, but, all right, if you're not going to score and they're making life difficult, hopefully you should be able to affect the game in other ways.
I really appreciated Ken's comments before we went to break. He talked about De'Aaron Fox as a point guard. Traditionally, your point guard should be able to help you get into your offense. And we know with the Kings, they tend to run the offense more through the high post. So De'Aaron is not that traditional point guard. But Malik did a really good job of that at times. And right now, the Kings, I think, are looking for someone who can get them into their offense, whatever it is that offense is
right
now.
Right. Do you think, you know, when you look at Malik in that offense, and you mentioned earlier that maybe De'Aaron isn't as good at it, have you seen it enough? Like, should they go to it more? Like, I feel like you might be right. Maybe he's not good. But I feel like I haven't even witnessed it a
whole lot. Talking about the pick and roll?
The pick and roll or, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that they did, and I think it was the last game or the game before that against the Pelicans, and it was late in the game, the high horn set where you have the bigs, the 5 and the 4, coming up way up high and setting the screen so De'Aaron can get downhill. If I'm Mike Brown.
With a shooter in the corner,
with a
right?
shooter in the corner. You got to do whatever you can to get Herb Jones off De'Aaron Fox. Herb Jones is elite.
Mm-hmm.
He causes havoc against everybody. And so maybe you look for something like that tonight. You know,
you want to go after CJ, right?
Yeah, I want to target CJ. You know, great guy, you know, in the wine business, you know, stand-up dude, part of the Players Association. But I need somebody to cook him tonight. And so hopefully you could get De'Aaron Fox on some switches where he can just go at CJ McCollum.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big challenge for the Kings tonight because you're playing the team that defends the three-point line better than anybody in the league statistically, and the Kings have been relying more and more on the three-point shot. It's not going in as it is, so it'll be fascinating to see what their approach is tonight. Maybe it's just, you know what, guys? We know we can make those shots. Keep spraying those threes. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the approach is we got to shoot more, but they shot 58 last game. How many more can you
shoot? You can't shoot more than that, right? I mean, I guess you can. I think the record is like 70. The Rockets back in the day with James Harden and those guys took 70 in one game. And, you know, here's the thing about it. Here we are in game 79 or 80, and we're still talking about the offense and a secondary offense, other ways to score.
But part of that's because Malik went down.
Yes. Are we now just a make-miss team, a three-point shoot? And whatever happens, if they're going in, great. If not, oh well. Are we resigned to the fact that we got to live and die by the three now with Malik out?
That's what they've been the last, 11 games. And I know a lot of people would look at that and say, that's coaching. But I think it's roster more than coaching. Because, you know, you've been saying they need that slasher or that guy that you
secondary.
Give the ball to. And that guy isn't there. And there's been some hope that maybe Keegan could become that guy. And, again, maybe he can, but he's not right now.
Let me ask you this then, because you're right, and Keegan's not that guy. How many guys on our team can get on any given night 7 assists right now?
2?
Exactly, 2. That's it. Everybody else eats off of Fox and Sabonis. We need one more guy, a la Malik Monk, that makes life easier for the others. Right now, life is too hard for the others when the offense bogs down.
Mm-hmm.
If Domas isn't feeding you on the, you know, from the high post, we're in trouble. If Fox isn't getting downhill and spraying out, we're in trouble. What happens when the ball gets to Keegan? He has to cook. He has to go in his bag. He has to make something. And I think when you look at Keegan Murray-Whitey, that's the evolution for him. We talked about his defense. We talked about him putting a ball on the floor. now put the ball on the floor, not only looking to score, but also create.
The distributor.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think we need more of that.
I thought it was really interesting to see Keon kind of – he ran the offense a little bit in the last game, and he struggled with it at times. But, you know, I think that's an area of growth for him. And the more comfortable he becomes doing that, the more valuable he's going to be. And he's such an asset now because – all of a sudden, you got this guy that's in his second year that's like a piece for you.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've been looking at the Kings and compare the roster to other teams like OKC. They've got all these young players.
Yep.
The Kings don't have as many, but there's one more that they have that they weren't sure they had.
Right. They didn't know they had, really.
Yeah. No, but as far as a combo guard, that's the area I think is a ball handler and distributor. He needs to be better in that area.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about Keon.
Keon Ellis. Yeah. Yeah.
As good as he's been this year. He's been
fantastic. No, he's been good finding his own, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, and you're right about that. And, you know, we talk about OKC, and let's talk about, you know, what we saw the other night. You know, obviously Shea is the stud of that team. But then you got Jalen Williams, J-Dub. You got Chet Holmgren. You got, you know, Cason Wallace. You got Isaiah Joe. You got guys that sort of know their roles and can have an impact on the game outside of the offense out there. And so, I mean, Monty McNair has some work to do this offseason, guys. Let's keep it real. You know, we got to improve the roster, tweak it a little bit, you know, get more ball handlers. I was in Boston and, you know, Brad Stevens basically broke it up into two positions, ball handlers and bigs. Ball handler, like there was no point guard, two guard, three. It was, are you a ball handler or are you a big? You look at the Celtics right now, they got a lot of ball handlers on their team. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Drew Holiday, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. Like, they got ball handlers. We need more ball handlers on this team.
We need Frankie Cardicelli. We've got him coming up bottom of the hour. And up next, can the Kings figure out how to play two first halves instead of a first half and a second half? Because the second halves have not been good.
Yeah.
Numbers on that are coming up with the Drive guys from the Golden One Center on Sactown Sports.
Woo!
We need some positivity in the facility this evening. Again, it is truly a must-win for the Kings. That is, if they want to have any hope after tonight of making the playoffs without going through the play-in, you got to win tonight. You got to win the next two. You got to hope the Pelicans lose out. And they have, what, the Lakers and the Warriors.
And the Warriors. Yes, yes. And those two teams still jockeying for position.
Warriors are, they're top. We're playing our best basketball. Right. And they probably are.
They are. And the good thing, though, you know, regarding, you know, the Warriors and the Lakers and the Pelicans having to play them, I think you would think those guys would at least still battle for home court for that play-in game, that 9-10 matchup.
Hope so.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so you would hope that they'd go all out to, even if they can't get 7 or 8, they'd at least want to achieve number 9, and that would help Sacramento out as long as we get this win tonight.
Would rather, me personally, not see the Kings play the Warriors in a 9-10. Don't want any part of that.
Why is that? Why is it just Steph Curry effect? Just matchup, but you like it better with the Lakers.
To be honest, if it, you know, the Kings have played well against the Warriors, I think that would be for the fan base, maybe for Vivek. It would be devastating to lose that game.
Yeah.
And maybe they win. Maybe they win. But that's after last year, then for it all to circle forward to a play-in with them when they're playing better and you're shorthanded, would like to avoid that. Would love to win that game, though.
And to your point, also, I'll just say this. We've been ahead of them all season long in the standings. We've had bragging rights all season long. The one thing we've been able to hold on is they're number 10 or they're behind us. If they beat us, after, you know, it's like running a marathon. This guy's trailing you all 26 miles, but that final point two kicks it in high gear and passes you at the line. At it would be a gut punch.
Yeah, you're right. But as we said, positivity, right? So, the Kings would win that matchup. That would be great. Here's one of the problems with the Kings the last, 10 games or so. The first half, they've played well, and the second half, what's going on here? Again, Will Z had some numbers here. First, second half split here. Field goal percentage last 10 games, 47.3% first half. Pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm. Solid.
Second half, 38.4.
Wow.
3-point field goal percentage. First half, 40.5.
Ooh.
You make some money doing that.
Very good.
Second half, 32.2.
Ah.
Wah,
wah. Ah.
Mm-hmm. Points. First half, 57.8. Second half, 49.5. Mm. And then the differential, first half's last 10 games, 7.4 in the first half, positive, minus 5.1 in the second half. So
what is that about? Is it adjustments that other teams make
question.
And we don't? Like,
that's probably the knee-jerk response, right, is, well, they're not adjusting.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some truth to that.
Maybe, right? I can't think of anything else, right? I mean, and maybe that not only that they're not adjusting, the other teams are adjusting coming out of the half, and then you got to make an adjustment in the second half. I don't know. That's extremely alarming, and it goes back to the point, you know, so many fans feel, you know, about a 20-point lead. You know, a 20-point lead in the first half is a lot different than a 20-point lead in the second half, mm-hmm. you know? And so when you start off on fire, hot, you know, I look at it, I think it was the Knicks game or the Celtics where we hit 7 of our first 10 threes. You sort of, you know, think, uh-oh, you know, you get a false sense of security. And in the NBA, everybody makes runs, man. Honestly, I'd rather be the team, you know, the second half team cooking than the first half team.
I'll tell you what I think it comes down to.
Yeah,
first, let me give you one more number here. Free throw percentage last 10 games by quarter for the Kings. First quarter, 78.9.
Okay.
Second quarter, 72.5.
Really?
Third quarter, 75. Fourth quarter, 70.7. And I think what this speaks to me, is that for as important as it is for the Kings to play tonight, the rest of the way, however long the season is, with emotion and intensity, that's a given. They have to do it. They have to execute. Especially tonight against this defensive team. So you have to execute. So the turnovers, we've seen them, you know, all of a sudden it's like it becomes a contagious disease where all of a sudden the ball just starts almost on its own, right? It's like the ball's flying all over the place. What's going on? You got to make free throws. You can't turn the ball over. And again, with the Kings jump shooting team, they got to make their shots.
They got to make
shots.
They
have to execute.
Yeah. And because when you look at it, and I need to look at these numbers here in a second. But when you look at it, the Kings, they should be an excellent fast break team. They should be, but they're not. So they aren't getting any easy baskets, Whitey. They're not getting out in transition. They're not getting the free throws. You just had the numbers. And so everything offensively is a grind for them, especially in the second half. Mm-hmm. And so if you aren't hitting shots, threes, you're not scoring any other way
because
mm-hmm. your half court is based on getting threes. You're not getting out in transition.
Right.
You're not getting to the free throw line.
So your margin for error starts to shrink.
Yes.
It's like you can win, but you can't make mistakes, and that's where they are right now.
And I also think, and you tell me if you feel this when you watch this Kings team, when one guy goes cold or two guys, it sort of becomes contagious, I feel like. And I don't know if, you know, guys are feeling the weight of the missed shots. You know, I remember Kevin Herter earlier this season when he had his struggles. It looked like every shot you could just feel the weight of it for him.
Yeah.
And I felt like in that OKC game when they had a number of different looks on that one possession, each one it just felt like it magnified and as the game went on. And so maybe they're getting tight, too. They're feeling the pressure in those situations.
It's such a tricky one because, as you know, the idea of an offense at any level, what do you want your offense to produce? Well, points, of course, but the offense should produce good shots.
Right.
That's all you can
That's
do.
That's all you ask.
And in that instance that you're talking about, as I recall, those were all good shots.
Good shots.
But not a single one of them went in.
Right.
So then it's like, do you need to create different shots? Is your team just not as good at making those shots as you thought they were?
Well, that's the story of our season, though, really. You know, how many times have we seen and heard Mike Brown after a loss? Oh, we had good shots. We just didn't knock them down. Here we are in game 80 still talking about that. Look at the efficiency numbers for everybody on our team outside of HB probably. You know, De'Aaron Fox, his efficiency is down. You know, look at his two-point shooting. You know, he was amazing, 50-something percent, 51%, I believe, last year. Look at Kevin Herter. Look at Keegan Murray. Like, everybody's percentages are down from when they were a season ago.
Mm-hmm. Campio says the Kings are consistently playing the first half good and the third quarter bad. He says 2 years now, Campio says, coaching issue. Ryan Williams Art says, I like Brown. I'd like a more consistent rotation. Campio says that the Kings have the top rebounder, fastest men in the NBA, very bottom in fast break points. He says, point center doesn't work. He says, read John Wooden's book. Then he adds, John Wooden is my cousin.
I know. He threw that in there, right, with a little asterisk at the bottom
of
it.
Maybe I imagined that. I thought I said
But to Campio's point and to John Wooden's point, and Whitey, this is basic elementary basketball. You coached youth basketball. We've all been there. What's the quickest way to advance the ball up the court?
Passing.
Exactly.
Don't dribble.
Not
pass.
Dribbling. Not Domas getting the rebound and dribbling it out. And, you know, that's something Mike Brown, you know, talked about, too, earlier in the season. Something he stressed to the guys is get the ball up, run. And it just hasn't happened. And so Campio's right, man. For this team to be 16th in the NBA in fast break points with the best rebounder and fastest man with the ball, something's wrong there.
I know Campio is clearly in your camp, and he's not necessarily a fan of mine, but I agree with him 100% there. And I think we've talked about this. I believe I've mentioned it. With Domas leading the break, as kind of a change of pace sometimes, that can be effective because the other big doesn't expect, oh, the guy that I'm guarding, there he goes down the middle of the floor. But when he leads the break more than anybody else, you know, it's like, give it to a guard, you know?
Yeah.
He comes in and sometimes he tries to get a little antsy. He's a good passer, not a great passer. I'm sorry, that's a fact.
How about Domas give up the rock and sprint and beat the other big down the floor, right?
Please run the floor.
Right.
That's old school.
That's old school basketball. Exactly.
Because it works.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, as a player, if I'm playing with Domantas Sabonis and I know, all right, he's going to bring it up, I got to get out, obviously. I wonder, psychologically, does that bother players? Like, if Domas gets it and I'm De'Aaron, I'm looking for a ball, or I'm Malik or somebody, and it's like, oh, yeah, that split second of like, oh, no, I'm not getting it, I need to run. I don't know. It's mind-boggling that this team, which was one of the best, if I'm correct, last year at being, you know, running the ball and pace and all that, is 16th in fast break points.
Yeah, at the risk of, you know, mixing sports here, to me, that Domas leading the breaks, like, that's a really effective changeup at times, but when you throw the changeup every time.
All the time.
Yeah, guys are going to sit on it and tee off on it.
Right, and I think, you know, I go back to what I said earlier this segment or last segment, we need more ball handlers. And Keegan should be able to handle the rock in the open floor. Keon should be able to handle the rock. Like, everybody should be able to handle the rock in the open floor. And I feel like we don't see that enough with this Kings team.
You know what we really need is Clicks Cardicelli.
Oh, yeah.
You with me?
I'm ready for him. I'm ready.
Frankie, our Sacktown Sports Kings insider, joins us next on this crucial day for the Kings. Frankie's next. Drive, guys. Sacktown Sports.
Noon Monday through Friday on Sacktown Sports.
Oh, let's face it. These have been somewhat troubling times for Kings fans.
Yeah.
You know, a road trip didn't go the way Kings fans wanted. Yeah, there's still a lot of attainable things the rest of this year, but you got a game you got to win tonight against a team you haven't beaten. We need somebody who can calm us down a little bit, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Who we got?
We got one of our outstanding Sacramento sports.com. SacktownSports.com insiders, Frankie Cardicelli. Oh, Clicks Cardicelli. How are you, Frank?
Fellas, good to be back. Good to hear from you. And yeah, definitely a big 24 hours here at the old G1C. So I'm excited to get out there and take all the action with you guys.
How about your personal Kings Fun Cup right now, Frankie? Would you say it's half empty or half full?
And I'm assuming full means I'm having a great time.
Half full is like, yeah, things are okay. Half empty is like, I'm Carmichael Dave.
I'm right in the middle. Like, I feel like I'm, again, like we've talked about before, I'm very numb to a lot of these things just based off of what, you know, obviously every Kings fan out there that has gone through over the past 15, 20 years. Like, I think this is more, I'm excited to see how it all kind of unfolds. I feel like this team has looked so good at times and so bad and just really unpredictable that it wouldn't surprise me at all if the team came out and won tonight and tomorrow. And it also wouldn't surprise me if they won these two games today and tomorrow and they lost Sunday, because that's the kind of year it's been for the Kings. So I really think it's kind of an interesting, you never know what you're going to get situation from the Kings. And I think that there's no doubt in my mind they have enough talent to get where they want to be.
So Frankie's insight, it drapes, is anything can happen, and I don't know which it is.
Right. Thank you. You get paid big money as our insider for that. Thank you, Frankie. Appreciate that, man.
I'm
messing with you.
I wish I had the answer.
Well, I'm about to tee one up for you, man, and please knock this one out the park. 1-3 road trip, blew a couple of 20-point leads. We know that. Tell me the reason why. What happened in the second half of those games that, you know, things just fell apart for the Kings?
Well, I think you guys kind of talked about it a little bit in the last segment that the Kings really do not have the presence of paint penetrators, of guys that can get into the paint and really kind of change their plan of attack. Right now, they've been kind of going through this just hope they can shoot out of it type of approach on the offensive end. And again, this is a team that does have shooters. But a lot of those shooters right now either going through cold stretches or they're out. Like Harrison Barnes right now, I think he's shooting 20% from three over his past six games. He's been pretty much invisible on the offensive end. Kevin Huerter out for the year. Malik Monk is obviously sidelined for possibly the rest of the season. They're relying on guys to knock down these threes that are really, in a lot of areas, kind of over-exceeding expectations. Like De'Aaron Fox is somebody who's had a career year from three, but if I were sitting here and telling you that the highest volume three-point shooter going into the crunch time of the season is going to be De'Aaron Fox, I feel like on the first day of the season, it'd be a little concerning, especially when you factor in that those other two players that are taking a high volume of threes are Keon Ellis and Davion Mitchell, both of who were not really high-minute rotation guys last year or in the rotation at all. So I think that what is concerning to me is the Kings are really not having a way to switch up their plan of attack when those shots aren't falling, and they're hoping they can kind of shoot out of it. And as we saw in OKC, on a night they had a franchise record for three-point attempts, it didn't come around for them. So if those threes don't fall, losses usually follow.
What's your opinion on this, Frankie? Because we know the last couple games they've been perhaps over-reliant on threes, but they're just letting them fly like we haven't seen them before. And you've got Sasha, who I think scored 11 against Boston, and then we haven't seen him much since. And when you're looking for somebody to knock down threes, and you have a guy who, you know, that's kind of his calling card, and he has shown you flashes of it, why do you think he's not playing? Could it be he's not defending in practice, or he's not 100%? What would be, I mean, who knows, but what would be your best guess there?
I feel like what Mike Brown has found with this team on the defensive end is the guys who he's playing right now bring you that intensity on that end, especially in that lineup that includes Fox, Mitchell, and Ellis, but he's been going with the three-guard lineups a little bit. So I do think when you see Trey Lyles, who's come back and been a positive off the bench on both ends of the floor, that there aren't many minutes, especially when you factor in that I think at times Mike is trying to get things out of Harrison Barnes, who when he is on offensively is very important for this team. We talk about guys that can get into the paint or get near the basket. That's what HB is really good at when he's on his game. He can put his head down, and if he gets downhill, especially on a break, he's able to get into the paint, draw fouls, and get to the rim. So I think with Sasha, it might come to a point where the Kings really do need to try something different when these shots aren't falling and HB is going through a cold stretch. It wouldn't hurt to break that glass in case of emergency and put him in there. But I do think that Mike kind of has his guys. He has his process right now, and the defensive end has been a big plus to this group. They're up to 14th in defensive rating now, which matches their offensive rating, which I don't know if any of us thought that was going to happen, especially near this time of the year.
Right.
So I think it's more of the defense to me, and I do think that if they're in a pinch and their offense goes ice cold like it did in Oklahoma City, it wouldn't hurt to see them thrown out there, but that's up to Mike.
Mm-hmm. You know, Frankie, I look at the injury situation with Malik and Kevin, and I think that's being understated, underplayed. I'm looking at some of the lineups Mike Brown is throwing out there with Keon and Kobe and Davion at times on the floor. And to me, there's no coincidence the offense has slid back. How much do you think the injuries are really hurting this team offensively, and how do they overcome that, I guess, here these last three games?
I'll like preface it by saying that I think that the Kings obviously have had opportunities to win games they shouldn't have, and yada yada. Like that being said, the bad losses aside, I think it's been huge to not have Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk. And And I can't sit here and say that's the entire reason why they might not be in the first round or they might not win the play-in. But I think that when you look at these specific games right here where you need NBA players with that experience and with that pedigree and also, you know, above all, that talent and just that personnel, losing those guys. And Malik Monk, I'm looking at, is, you know, specifically because of what he brought this year during what has been a career year for someone who really can just be a player that you put in when De'Aaron Fox is getting a breather. He really picks up without much slack. Like, he is someone that can get into the paint. He can knock down a three. He's quick. He's athletic. He's a playmaker with his assists. I think that he has more assists in this year than he might have had nearly his whole entire career in Charlotte. I think this year I was tracking that earlier. He really has been a great playmaker and ball handler. So losing those guys, and Kevin Huerter as well, who the defense, I know that there was a struggle, but what he brings on offense, his ability to get hot from the perimeter in the way that he can do it, off dribble handoffs, off of those screens, it's not something the Kings can really replicate. And they've tried to do so with those guys you just named. Davion Mitchell has been a huge surprise from three-point land. I think that that's been a great part of his game he's developed. Keon Ellis as well, who's proven he can play both sides of the ball. But having those guys along with Malik and Kevin would just made this team that much more deep. And now they're kind of having to dig deeper and look at the Colby Jones, who has spent most of the year playing in the G League or out of the rotation. Sasha, like we saw, is getting spot minutes, not too much. Trey Lyles playing more minutes. They really kind of thrown together what they have here. Kessler Edwards in a pinch for defensive purposes. So I think if you were to have Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk, first of all, the Kings might be in a better position standings-wise, but even just better as an overall feel going into these games against New Orleans, who will be out without Brandon Ingram, but then against Phoenix, who's pretty healthy and playing some good basketball right now. So losing those guys definitely is kind of a dark cloud hanging over this team.
SacktownSports.com, Kings insider Frankie Cardicelli with us. Frankie, I have a little bit of a preview on your dinner tonight, so plan accordingly. I think might be some kind of chicken. Is that what it
is? Let me see here.
Yeah.
I think that mine looks like a brisket or something.
Oh, brisket.
Ooh. Yeah, brisket action. Okay.
I guess it is. Okay.
Yeah.
The brisket's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. How come the Kings, what's the number one reason why the Kings have not been able to feast on roasted pelican at all this year? How come the Pelicans have the Kings' number?
They're physical. I mean, they're top of the charts in a lot of areas in the defensive end. And I think one of the main stats I'm looking at here, for a team like the Kings, when they have Domantas Sabonis, the league's best rebounder, being out-rebounded by nearly 15 rebounds per game. In the four matches with the Pelicans this year, the Pelicans have a 49-34.3 advantage on the glass. They're just getting beat there and getting those second chance points really have hurt them. Obviously, the last time the Pelicans were here, the Kings lost by 33 points. They got beaten every single category you can look at. So I'm looking at the glass. Can the Kings bring the physicality on that end? And I'm looking at Domantas Sabonis as well to see a guy who's been kind of going through it a little bit, especially on the offensive end. We saw the double-double streak come to an end. I mean, I don't think that's something that was really hanging over anybody's head or something that was distracting him from his play. But this is as good a time as any for him to bounce back against a team that has players he's very familiar with. He's very familiar with Jonas Valanciunas from their time on the Lithuanian national team. You've obviously seen him go up against Zion Williamson multiple times now. So I'm looking at the glass and seeing if the Kings can match that physicality and hope they can get over a defense that's very, very good.
Frankie, I had forgotten this, but do you remember what the rebounding numbers were the last time they played? As I looked at these, I remember looking up at the scoreboard during the game and wondering, wait, how can that be? I've never seen that before. It was 51-25. Remember that? That was the rebounding numbers in the last game. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone on the Kings scored more than like 12 or 14 points. It was really just a very strange night. It really was bad across the board. I think that the way I wrote it was, any statistical category you look at, the Pelicans have the upper hand. And that really was a game that the Kings would certainly not like to replicate.
Right. Well said. All right, Frankie, we'll see you in a little bit. Thanks. We appreciate it very much. Positive vibes tonight, right? Bring that positivity.
Positive, man. Positive. This is what we watch or listen, write for, work for, whatever. This is the game. These are the games we look forward to. So high-stakes stuff at the G1C.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's Frankie Cardicelli. Check him out. Outstanding Kings coverage, SacktownSports.com. When we come back, these rankings. We have these tier rankings now in The Athletic for NBA players.
Okay.
Are these rankings wrong, or is the Kings' overall problem obvious? Next year with the Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports. We ask for positivity. We get it, of course, on the chat from the end. Hells are the toughest game left on the schedule. With a win tonight, we should win out, in my opinion. How about
that? That's what I'm talking about, man. We need that positivity in our lives right now. Yes.
Manny, too legit. Ingram is out. We need to destroy Zion.
Exactly. That's the kind of love I need, Sacramento Kings fans. Not this get the season over with.
Can we
Mike
just end
Brown,
it now?
Harrison Barnes. Like, no. We're fired up. We're ready for tonight.
And you want to know what Compio's favorite part of our chat with Frankie was?
What?
At 3:33 on the chat, Compio said, Selena! It was when Selena brought your food up here.
Oh, my gosh.
Watching, obviously, on the YouTube, which we appreciate.
Yeah we got the new grub. We got the new grub here. Thank you, Selena. I'm going to have to talk to her about the cookie choices, though.
What do you mean?
The double chocolate's just not cutting it.
Oh, they do have those oatmeal ones down there, but nobody
exactly.
wants them.
Exactly. Me and RJ
it's
want
like,
oatmeal, right?
It's like a pile of them because nobody wants
oh,
them.
Oh, I want it. RJ said, nope, you want it. I'm the only me and Alan Styles. That's about it, man. But the
they got a whole room full of them because no one ever eats them, and they just, what do we do with them?
I know, right? Yeah, dude, next break, I'm going to go down and get me a cookie, an oatmeal raisin one for sure.
Okay. The All Athletic right. today has some player tiers, which are basically like player rankings. Yep. I mentioned this because was it yesterday we talked about the Ringer's top 100, and they still don't have Malik in there. So this is their pre-playoff player tiers. And they have tiers 3 and 4 today. So tiers 1 and 2, the very best players, are not listed yet. Mm-hmm. But what do we have here? Tiers 3 and 4, according to the Athletic. Tier 3, Gobert, Tyrese Halliburton, 3A.
Tier 3, oh.
Holmgren, Kyrie, Dame, Zion, Trae Young, Jaylen Brown, DeRozan, Drew Holiday, Markkanen, Kristaps Porzingis, Siakam, Paolo, Beal, Ingram, Maxey, Derek White, and Jalen Williams. That's tier 3.
Okay.
Tier 4 is Anunoby, Desmond Bane, Scotty Barnes, Mikal Bridges, Garland, Aaron Gordon, Draymond Green, Jaren Jackson, Brooke Lopez, CJ McCollum, Middleton, Brandon Miller, Evan Mobley, Porter, Randall, Domantas Sabonis.
Oh, wow.
Domantas Sabonis. Tier then they four. Have Şengün, Van Vliet, Franz Wagner, Jared Allen, Herb Jones, Murphy, DeJounte Murray, Kat, Miles Turner, LaMelo, RJ Barrett, Miles Bridges, KCP. Somewhere down here they have.
As you're naming these, is these like.
Malik Monk is 4C. Those are the two kings.
Okay, all right. Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I assume then tiers 2 and 1, when that comes out, De'Aaron Fox will be somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there, probably tier 2. Who's
It's Chris Haynes, isn't it?
Man, you walking up. When you coming on the show, big dog? You want to come on?
Come on and show.
Chris, what you got going on?
Oh, he's going to the phone. I got to do this. I got to do that.
Come holler at me after that. All right. Chris Haynes. Well, I'm about to give him a two-piece no sauce. He's rolling up on me like that. But, man, that's interesting. As you were going through that list, I thought, all right, then we got two guys in the top two tiers then. Because I thought Domas, like, oh, he's not in tier 3.
Tier 4
tier
A.
Tier 4 A.
Yeah.
So, basically, we got one guy in the top three tiers.
Yeah.
That's De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah. And like I said, Malik is 4C with like guys like Zach LaVine, Tyler Herro, and Emmanuel Quickley. So, you know, maybe these are all wrong. But you look at this list. You look at the one in the Ringer yesterday.
Right.
Is it possible that the Kings' issue right now, the reason they're having problems winning some of these games is because they don't have as many good players as the other teams?
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Then maybe we're silly for getting a little bent out of shape over some of these games, if that's the case.
No, and especially with the injuries, we just don't have the horses right now.
I agree.
You know, we just don't have the horses right now to, you know, actually win these games. We could play well for a half. We could play well for a quarter. But to actually win, it's going to take high level throughout. And we're just shorthanded right now.
But don't you think the plan would have been for Keegan to at least be in one of the
oh yeah Keegan's
now.
Not even in it. Yes, I think so, especially after the summer that he had, the expectations, and I think within the organization they expected Keegan to make a maybe a bigger leap. And I look at all the contenders, you know, Denver, Minnesota, OKC, even they got two or three guys in the top two or three tiers.
Yes, sir.
All right, you know, we got one guy in the top three tiers. I think ultimately, you know, let's look at it.
Assuming, again, that's assuming this is correct. This is
correct.
All opinion.
Are we as talented as the Pelicans? Let me ask you that.
No,
both
not right
teams
now.
I'll healthy. Say,
not right now.
What about both healthy. Teams completely healthy?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think they have more upper-level talent. Like, you know, Zion, Ingram, a former All-Star, CJ. Mm-hmm. Like, they got upper-level guys. You know, maybe not tier one,
Murphy,
but tier two,
Jones,
three guys.
Yeah.
You know, are we more talented than Phoenix?
There's a weird don't have the three impact.
I'm going to say
players.
No.
Yeah, I have to say no.
I'm say
I don't want to say no, but I have to say no.
Are we more talented than Dallas?
No.
So what are we doing here then, Whitey?
I know.
You know,
know.
Like.
That's why I think the people that criticize Mike Brown need to look at this side of the cookie
right,
as well.
Exactly. Like, and we could argue, and last year was an anomaly, we could argue that maybe they overachieved last year. And especially without Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk here recently. I mean, and think about it. They're at 45 wins with a chance at best to get to 48.
Mm-hmm.
And Carmichael Dave had a tweet up there, a poll. You know, he's king of the polls. He's always, you know, throwing out the polls. Has this team overachieved or underachieved this year? And I might say that they're probably just spot on.
Yeah, I would say C.
C, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
They've achieved.
That. They are what they've achieved. Yeah, I don't think they've overachieved. I don't think they've underachieved. Like, I think they've achieved, like you said, because we just mentioned all the teams right around them, you could argue, are more talented than the Sacramento Kings right
the,
now.
The problem is that the Kings, some of the players, you know, we talk about HB, but also, as you said, Keegan, some others, they've been so inconsistent this year. Mm-hmm. And is that because they're not, you know, sometimes you're inconsistent because you're just not as good,
right.
Or is there something here that just hasn't clicked yet? That we don't know. But whatever it is, if it's something that hasn't clicked yet, it better click tonight.
It better click tonight. And some of the younger guys, our guy Colby Jones is out here. Jordan Ford about to get some warm-up action going on. And, you know, what's interesting about this, Whitey, and this is something I talked to Doug Christie about. This is a couple of years ago. And this shows you the mindset that the Pelicans have coming in. You know, traditionally, the Kings warm up in front of their bench. And the other team warms up in front of their. Like, that's the side they choose usually. But there are a few teams in the NBA that say, we're going to put you on the other side. And so even before the game has started, the Pelicans are sort of sending a message. That's something from Doug. Him and I have talked about this. Like, when I go into the arena, I'm not, hey, your usual sweet cut. No, we're changing it up tonight. You going down there to
already
warm
knocking
up.
You out of your routine.
Yes, they're already throwing you for a little bit of a loop. And so that's the kind of mindset the Kings got to have too tonight, man. When they you know, lace them up and play them, it's like, all right, we're going to strap them up too and come at you.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a key point for tonight's game. If the Kings allow the Pelicans to do this again tonight, well, then it's play-in time. Next year with the Drive, guys, as we roll on from the Golden One Center on Sacktown Sports.